Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike to tell you along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, ESPN senior college football writer Chris Lowe. Chris, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Mike, it's always good to be with you, my friend.
Chris, we'll jump to it right away. Orange Bowl, and Charlie and I were talking about this. These two teams have sort of built everything on their defense. And, man, they've been stellar, physical guys up front along the offensive, defensive lines. They run the football well. Now, which one of the quarterbacks ain't going to make the big mistake? Because, you know, you can see, you know, with Notre Dame, how they want to kind of set things up and make it easier for Riley Leonard. And Drew Aller, I don't know which one you catch from week to week, to be honest with you. One day he looks really good, and the next day he doesn't. Your thoughts on the Orange Bowl? I know there's been a bit of the flu going around at Notre Dame, and that may affect their depth and maybe some special teams. But, man, we had a lot of people this week say, bet the under on this game.
Yeah, well, and I think that when you look at it, I would say the same thing. Both teams up front, the line of front seven, I think are pretty good, really good. And, you know, I think, Mike, when you come into these types of games where the stakes are so high and neither team has given up a whole lot on defense, and I know this probably sounds elementary, but I really think it gets down to when they get the ball, when either offense gets the ball, whether it's a short field, where they drive, where they hit a chunk play, and they get the ball inside the 20, I think the team that can figure out a way to score a couple of touchdowns and not kick field goals is probably going to win this game. And being able to run the football and get the tough yards and if you get it inside the 20, having some third and ones and third and twos and not third and sevens. And I think when you look at it, both teams, I think, have guys that certainly can get yards on the ground. Jeremiah Love looks like he's going to be a full participant. There were some questions about him, Notre Dame's running back. And then Penn State goes more with that two-pronged attack. Yeah. Now, I'll say this. Leonard is more of a threat at Notre Dame to run the football. He's a guy that has scored touchdowns, a ton of touchdowns this year, run the football. So if they do get the ball, the Irish get the ball down close, he's a guy you got to account for at the quarterback position to run it probably more than you do Aller.
One of the things, Chris, we talked about this before the season even started. I told Charlie this. Man, Notre Dame, when they played Texas A&M, very young offensive line, but that line has really matured and quickly, big men up front. And the fact that, you know, it's hard to replace a guy like Juwan. I mean, you know, he's the fifth pick in the draft. Goes to the Chargers. That, to me, for Notre Dame, has been the biggest surprise. How all those young guys up front for them have meshed and meshed very quickly. And that is really a strength of this football team up front along the offensive line and a very young one for the Irish.
It's sort of being... in a lot of ways, it symbolizes the way this team has improved, Mike, from early in the year to now. I mean, you go back to that loss to Northern Illinois, where this team was. What did he score? 14 points in that game. Did not run the ball. Couldn't run the ball. Sort of bounced back from that game and got better and better. I saw Notre Dame live once this year and was really impressed with the way they protected Leonard. And again, having a guy that can move around at the quarterback position, you know, is a lot of times the offensive line's best friend. And he's been able to do that. But just the way they've had more guys like a Love, some of the breakaway plays, and then when they've had to bully people up front, they've been able to do that. And you sort of look at this playoff to this point, that's what's happened. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you want to say one position has in a lot of ways been that one position that's helped transform Notre Dame to where they are now from where they were early in the season after they lost Northern Illinois, I would say that position, the offensive line, has been the one that's most checked that box.
Tomorrow, Ohio State and Texas, and I have a neighbor of mine, and he's a big Southeastern Conference fan, SEC fan, LSU. And so I told him, well, I was down to one team in the SEC, and he was like, man, LSU is an SEC team. Georgia's an SEC team. Texas, they ain't no SEC team. They're a corporate bagger team in the SEC. All I know is they're still standing. That's all I know. But, boy, do they have a tiger by the tail, so to speak, in Ohio State, who for the last two games have steamrolled everyone in front of them. And this is going to come down. Can Will Howard play even close to what he's played the last 2 weeks, because you look at that 1-2 punch at running back, and then, man, Jeremiah Smith, I haven't seen in recent memory a freshman that come in to take over games like what he can. And then he got Abuka, who's a really good receiver too. And it was so funny, Manning Passing Academy, I got to talk to Will, and he made the comment to me real quick, for Ohio State, it's national championship or bust this season. Nothing else will be settled for.
Yeah, I think the when you start about talking about Ohio State and this team, that's exactly right, Mike. And when they put this team together, you're talking about a roster that's $20 million. They brought in a lot of key pieces, like a Caleb Downs, one of the top safeties in America. You're going to get a Quinshon Judkins, who was at one point the SEC's leading rusher. And the guys that I think the other thing is, people talk about players they brought in, Mike, from other teams. The retention on this team, they had about eight guys who could have gone pro last year that had draftable grades. Some of them in the top couple rounds, and they came back. Now, they all came back because they wanted to do things they haven't done, i.e. beat Michigan, which you still not going to be able to do, but win a national title. You know, they still got a chance. But, you know and I know that a big part of that in this, that today's game is being able to broker new deals to entice these kids to come back. And that's how you bring back a Jack Sawyer and Ed Buka, some of the guys you mentioned. And, Donovan Jackson. Those guys all came back and have really been the core of this team. You know, it's not often anymore that a team the caliber of Ohio State has as many seniors and fifth-year seniors, Mike, as this team does, not in this age of football, and they do. And I think that has helped them sort of hold it together after some of the disappointments this year. But I'll say it very simply. If Ohio State plays its A game, I don't think there's anybody left that can beat Ohio State.
I agree.
If Ohio State plays its A game and Texas plays its A game, Ohio State's A game is better. Same for the winner of Penn State and Notre Dame. That's the level at which they're playing at right now. And honestly, I think the level that most people thought they would play at when they put this thing together. I've seen them twice now. I was in Columbus for the Tennessee game. I was in L.A. for the Oregon game. And they're playing at a different level. And number four, I mean, good luck in covering that guy. 6'3", 225. He runs like a track guy. He tracks the football in the air, Mike. He contested catches, catch after or run after the catch. There's nothing he doesn't do. I guess you would know this better than me. What's last time a receiver's gone number one in the draft was what, Keyshawn?
Yeah,
is that right?
And then before that, it was Irving Fryer. It was Fryer and then Keyshawn. That's a long way before that first pick. If he was out in this draft, I don't know if he'd get picked number one because, one thing Hebert's right about, quarterbacks trump everything, but he'd be my number one rated player. He's that good.
If he's not number one, then there'd be a lot of people, I think, kicking themselves in the rear 2 or 3 years later when they didn't pick him number one. But he still got – here's the worst news for everybody else in college football has got to defend that guy. He's got two more years to play. He's a true freshman. And I was talking to Chip Kelly, Mike, about him out in L.A. before the game. And Chip's coached at the collegiate level, the NFL level. He's seen a lot of good players. He just said, I've never had one that big with those kind of hands that can run and separate and bully receiver corners the way he can in that type of package. Like, I asked him, I said, what do you weigh now? He said, well, when I got to campus, I was like 208. He said, I'm 225 right now.
Jesus.
And the way he runs, they got to figure out a way, when I say they, obviously Texas, to take him. Maybe you don't take him completely out of the game, but you can't let him take over the way he did early against both Tennessee and Oregon.
That's been kind of the strategy with Ohio State in these two playoff games against Tennessee ever since, that loss to Michigan. And it feels like the Michigan thing is just kind of a mental thing at this point, Chris. I think you'd agree with me there. But when you look at what happened against Tennessee and Oregon back-to-back, I mean, Ohio State just blitzed them both times. I mean, 21-0 in the first quarter against Tennessee. I think it was like 34-0 against Oregon. It's just, what can you even do at that point? So if you're Texas in this matchup in the Cotton Bowl tomorrow, I mean, that's just step number one, is just making sure that you kind of tread water early on. Because if Ohio State gets out to that early lead, and then they have those two running backs that Mike and I were talking about in the first segment with Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson, that they can just ground and pound you out. And then be able to throw it to Ibuka or, you know, Jeremiah Smith when they need to on those third and longs. It's a real tough situation for a defense to be in. So, you know, kind of avoiding that early tsunami, so to speak, has got to be step number one for Texas in the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, and for all that Jeremiah did in that first game, you forget that Travion had like a 70-yard run for a touchdown.
So he's electric,
Chris. All right, we're going to take away your pass game. You know, he or Judkins, either one, are certainly capable of popping a big one. Maybe I'm talking about the wrong thing here when I'm talking about defending Ohio State. Because the other thing, and I think we all are guilty of this sometimes, go back and look at the last two games, how many clean pockets Will Howard had. How many times have we seen him trying to throw the football with people in his face?
Yep.
Not many. And I think if you're gonna defend Smith, you know, maybe the secret is, you know, come up with some stuff, you know, maybe I don't want to say roll the dice, you know, but come up with some blitzes, you know, try some things, come at him from some different directions and try to get him off his game a little bit early and not give him clean pockets. You know, and I understand when you do that, you know, and you have to single cover that guy, then that's not, as a defensive coordinator, that's not the most fun thing in the world. But I think they've got to find a way early to get Howard out of rhythm and not give him a lot of clean pockets, to your point, and not let them get off so quickly and score a bunch of touchdowns early.
Chris, last question for you is Carson Beck. And, man, I should have known something was up. Tuesday, Bob and I and Rich Marty, we do this Sports on the Bayou TV show at noontime. And Coach O got put into we made the announcement that he's going to be in the Bayou Hall of Fame this year for 2025. His three sons are there. And one of them, who coaches the quarterbacks at Miami, and I told me, y'all got some big moccasins to fill. And he was like, Mr. Mike, I think we might have somebody in line. And he sort of winked at me. I was like, okay, you ain't going to tell me? He's like, no. And then all of a sudden, Carson Beck decides that he is going to play another year of college football. I think he probably would have been maybe a late third, but more likely a fourth-round pick in his draft. And they're going to have a ton of teams, and I think certainly Miami or Florida comes to mind real quickly. Don't rule out Ohio State as another team that would circle the wagons for Carson Beck. And now we've seen guys that they aren't going to be maybe first or second-round picks, and with Carson, certainly some of that has to do with the injury and the rehab. But those guys say, man, with this NIL situation, I'm making more money in college football than I'm making the pros. And he's going to come back and try to do what Cam Ward did a year ago. Cam was in the exact same spot. He was probably given a middle-round pick grade at best. Decides to play another year of college football at Miami, and he may end up being the first overall pick in the draft. Your thoughts on Carson Beck?
I don't think it's any coincidence, Mike, that three of the four quarterbacks that are remaining are transfers. And you look at it right, and I think that's probably going to be the norm going forward, especially at that position. Miami is, I think, made known they're willing to pay a lot of money, $3 million in the neighborhood to get a quarterback. And I'm also told, in fact, I was told when Beck announced, when the announcement was made last month, that he was going to have the surgery on the elbow. That's the other thing, too. I don't know. That surgery and that injury would really hurt him in some of the testing things for the pros right now, combine. You know, yeah, he's got a lot of tape, but he wouldn't really be able to go out and work out. And I think that's one of those things that's not ideal, which also would factor in to him coming back for another year. But I'd heard last month that Miami – that he could very well get into the portal, and then Miami would probably be the most likely destination for him. And then he came out after that and said he's going to turn pro, which, you know, you can, and who knows, maybe he still does go pro. But I think Miami makes the most sense, and they've shown they're going to pay big money. Ohio State's shown it's going to pay big money. Listen, with quarterbacks, nothing will surprise me going forward. The amount of money that teams will be willing to pay.
I agree. For
a kid that is experienced and played, look at what McCord did at Syracuse. Think about that 2021 Ohio State signing class, Mike. you know, we've talked about a lot of them already, Donovan Jackson, Trevion Henderson, Mbuka. You know who else was in that signing class? Quinn Ewers was in that signing class.
Yes, he was.
Kyle McCord was in that signing class. Marvin Harrison Jr. was in that signing class. And that class is just was star-studded, and that's why I think those guys coming back, they understood that this is a chance to really cement their legacy if they could win championship. But in the realm of quarterbacks, to your point, there are going to be people out there spending money like we're used to seeing money spent in NFL. Maybe not quite to that point, but if you're a third or fourth round guy projected at quarterback, I think the money you can get now from a big time program that's got a chance to be in the playoff, there's going to be a lot of kids that are second guessing. Jackson Dart's another one. I would have told you a week to 2 weeks ago that there might be a 50-50 chance that he would try to come back to Ole Miss. I think Mikey has moved up the board high enough in talking to some people that would know that he's probably now it's going to make more sense for him to go. He might be one of the top three or four quarterbacks taken in the draft, Jackson Dart. But just the mere fact that a kid that had those kind of numbers, you know, or Beck would even think about coming back and playing tells you the kind of money that's been passed around now at that position.
And it's not stopping, Chris. You know, we have a lot of people, you know, kind of a certain age that'll say, man, I hate this. It's not my dad's college football, my grandpa. It's not how I grew up. Well, listen, you didn't grow up with a cell phone if you're over 45 years old either. You know, that you got to make changes in life. And this college football world's not changing anytime soon. And not in our lifetime, it's not. You can put salary cap or whatever. There's going to be a way to work around that salary cap.
Yeah, once upon a time in college basketball, there was no three-point line and no shot clock either. So
that's right.
You better change. You better be able to evolve.
Chris, thanks so much for joining us, bud. Always appreciate time and insights. Take care. And I didn't get to tell you, but Happy New Year.
Thank you, Mike. You guys have a great day.
Thank you. Chris Lowe, our ESPN senior college football writer, joins us all the time. And I first knew Chris. He was the first beat writer to cover the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, you told me that story.
That's how he started covering the Panthers in year one. And he's like, Mike, tell me what happened with the Saints in year one. What? I was 7 years old, man. But I can't tell you a lot about it, but I wasn't actually covering the team at that time.